Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Folks, welcome back to another episode of the Hurricane H Show, where we bring you the real, the raw, and the revolutionary conversations that transform lives. Today's guest is nothing short of iconic in the world of personal transformation. She is an Emmy Award winner, a repeat guest on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and the founder of the Fearless Living Institute, home to what's being called the Ivy League of Life Coach Training Programs. She's authored 4 best-selling books, including the groundbreaking Fearless Living, now translating to 16 languages, wow, and has changed lives in over 600 episodes of reality television. She's also made history as the first life coach on television, appearing for 3 seasons as the head coach on NBC's Starting Over, where the New York Times named her the show's most valuable player. Known as America's favorite life coach, she blends, the work and just the success here. So with me, I have Rhonda Britton. Rhonda, welcome to the show.
Ooh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Not as much as I am. I mean, like, again, I don't always get TV, stars and the coaches and people, but I've had a few share of celebrity guests and frankly, it's always an honor and a privilege and to have you because this work is phenomenal. There's a lot of it out there. And when you do much of it and a lot of it out there, I mean, you really touch on lives. And I think that's really the mission here is to help people. Now you specialize in a very, good area that I think every human has. We have different lives, fears in this life, right? We're going to touch on all that. But I want to just before that, I mean, just the experience that you have, I mean, the work you've been doing, an Emmy Award. Now, I want to talk about that, just your professional side of it. Because, I mean, I think it's intriguing. I mean, I don't get to have, folks like you all the time. So when I have someone, I want to just get, how does it work? I mean, just being in that light, in limelight and having some real appearances with top, TV personalities. I mean, Oprah, I mean, TV shows. I mean, it's a lot of work and I know it's not easy. I mean, podcast is one thing, but being out there, in these platforms and studios, I mean, it's just, let's guide our audiences just to your experience and how you even got there. I mean, I'm sure something got you into the world of TV. It's just something I'm intrigued about, just if you don't mind.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I got on TV because I was in London. So my book came out, Fearless Living, and I did a book tour in the United States, and then I did a book tour in the United Kingdom. And when I was in London, in my book tour there, the publicist that was walking me around said, Rhonda, there was no such thing as reality television at this time. So there was nothing, there was no such thing as reality television. So I know that's kind of mind-blowing, but there wasn't any reality television with a life coach changing lives. And so she said to me, there's this show that wants to be created. Like, they want to hire a life coach or a therapist or something and change lives on TV. And I was like, okay. She goes, they've been looking for 9 months and they haven't found anyone. And I went, sure. You know, will you do a screen test? Sure. So the next day we go to the studio for the screen test. And, you know, when I was younger, you know, when I was a little girl, all I wanted to do was be an actress. So when I was in my mid-20s, I moved to Los Angeles to be an actress. And I was an actress for, you know, 7 years, 8 years. And then I just was thinking about this last night. You know, God took it out of my heart. Like, the thing that I wanted to do my whole life, I just started realizing wasn't for me. And I remember saying to myself, I'm tired of playing characters. I want to know who I am. Like, I don't even know who I am. I've been so busy acting. So I quit acting. And when I quit acting, it was like my heart got ripped out. Like, who am I if I'm not an actress, if that's all I wanted to be since I was a little girl? And so I went through this dark night of like, what the heck's going on? Which eventually led me to part of the story of where I am today. So here I am. You know, I when I wanted to be an actress, I would pray, like, please, God, give me a series. Please, God, give me a series. I want a series, a television, God. Please give me a series. And so then I quit acting. So that dream is out the toilet. And so here I am in London, and they're saying to me, we want to create a reality television show. We want to audition you. So I go to the screen test. They have a 20-year-old girl there, 25-year-old girl there, and I'm coaching her on dating. Well, I trust myself completely when I'm coaching, and I'm not afraid of the camera because obviously I did it for a long time. So I was fully present, and I kicked her ass and took her name, and they were all there hanging their mouths open, right? Like, what just happened? Right? Because they'd been auditioning for the last 9 months and they couldn't find anyone. So 3 weeks later, I was living in London doing the television show. And I remember when I landed in London and started filming, I remember just thinking how amazing the universe works. You know, here I was all those years ago, you know, please God, give me a series. Then I quit the very thing that would give me the series. I'm not going to do this. You know, there is no TV anymore. I leave acting. And there is no such thing as reality television at that moment when I quit. And then now I'm on a reality television show playing myself, which is the very reason I left acting, is because I wanted to be myself. And now I'm doing TV as myself. I mean, it was mind blowing, right? And I, and it's just one example of how everything that you've ever done in your life is going to be used for your purpose. Because, you know, here I am, left the very thing I wanted to do. And it's the very thing that ended up putting me in the world of television. And, you know, reality television changing lives is all about creating visceral experiences and very visual experiences. You can't just talk like you and I are. This is not, you know, right? We can't do this on TV. We have to, like, I have to have them, you know, throw rocks in the river, and I have to, like, have them carry something, and I have to put them in a cage, and I have to make them be a maid, and right? And I didn't know that I was good at that, but I'm really good at that. So I created because I've done over 600 episodes of television. I've never repeated an exercise. So I've probably created over 1,600 unique exercises to help people move through a problem that has kept them down for years, maybe even decades, in a very visceral way, in a very visual way, so they can truly change their lives.
I don't know where to start. There's quite a bit.
Well, it was it was amazing because, you know, it was amazing, but because when I did that TV show, when I did the TV shows, I just remember thinking to myself, I'm changing the people's lives that I'm coaching, of course, that's why I'm here, right? But I knew that I was really changing the lives of the viewers. I knew that they were just a vehicle in front of me where I could change thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of people's lives. So, I always say, you know, I didn't play a life coach on television. I actually had to change their lives. So I actually had to do it. And that was when I first did it. I remember because TV is a medium where they want everything pre-planned, right? And I remember I'm sitting in the first meeting and they're like, okay, these are going to be our three, you know, our six people for the season. And how are you going to change their lives? I go, I don't know. They're like, what? You know, like, what do you mean you don't know? I go, I don't know. I haven't talked to them yet. I mean, they were like literally pulling out their hairs. And, but we got into a rhythm. I told them I was going to do the first episode. And then after the first time we filmed with the person, I'd be like, okay, well now I'm going to do this the next time. So they'd always be 1 week ahead. But I got to tell you, I know for the production company, it was literally like drove them insane until they started trusting that I always had the answer. And then, but that's how we made TV.
It is dream. I mean, that's why I said earlier, this, the world TV. I mean, listen, I do have a media network, you know, and it's, we are kind of TV, but we haven't done those kinds of shows yet. I mean, it's different. We will be doing that eventually, but really just the idea of, first of all, you, I mean, I just want to touch base on what you stated about your career path. When you started, you always wanted to act and you did that. And that's something for all the young folks out there, any age, I would say, if you have a dream, you have a goal, you have a passion, again, you know, you have to go after it, no matter what. You know, get it out of your system. You have, you know, like I sometimes people say, "Oh, I love that car." You want it? Go do whatever it takes legally, of course. Get it done. Get it out of your system. You lease it and enjoy it for a couple months or years, whatever. You want something in your life? You have to do it, because life is too short, and we have to take every minute of it for what it's worth and the value.
But what you're saying is also really important, because most of us, especially when we're starting to honor our wants, is the things that we think we want aren't what we want at all. But we don't know that until we go and want it and get it. And then we go, wait a minute, this isn't what I thought it was. And so then as we learn this skill of what's the difference between wanting and, you know, from a place of, you know, pleasure or fear versus a wanting from a real soul perspective, from a place of wisdom, those are two very different places. But a lot of times, especially, you know, when we're young, we just go by our pleasure, by what we want, right? Great, go do it. Because you're going to eventually recognize that those wants aren't your best direction. Thanks. They're not your best allies. They're not actually the best guides for you. But you don't know that until you go and get what you want, and it doesn't feel all that great, right? It's like, oh, I mean, it's nice for a little time. Like you said, like it could be a month or a year or a couple of years, and it's like, well, no, I actually want something different now. So we get kind of, one of the things that what happens with fear is that we get caught in the thing we think we want, and we actually don't allow ourselves to grow out of that want and into a different want, into a different desire, into a different passion. We get held back from, because we said, I want this. And then we get stuck in the trapped in that want and don't allow ourselves to move beyond it. It's one of the things that your wants are going to change your whole life, right? Well, so, you know, can you keep yourself out of the trap? It's like what most people do in their careers, right? I wanted to be this, and now I don't want to be this, but now I can't get out of it. I make too much money. I have too much this. I said I wanted this house, and now I don't want this house, but now I, right? So we get trapped by our wants. So being able to want what we want, but not be attached to it, and know that we are going to change. Our palates are going to change. I used to hate olives. I like olives now. Shocking. I used to hate them, right? But now I like them. So we have to be willing to grow, shift, change, evolve in order to become our highest version of ourselves, which is never ending, by the way. And that includes our tastes, our wants, our desires, our goals, our dreams, everything.
Well, on the thank you, really. I mean, you really highlight something that I don't think I've heard someone so far, you know, addressing this, because we're talking about, like I was talking about, the passion, you have a dream, you go after it. That's one thing. But you're right, when you start breaking it down to level of needs and wants and change patterns, because I think every one of us, listen, I'm in my 50s now. I am not the same person 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And every decade, you almost kind of become a new guy, a new gal, right? Because your stuff shifts and your environment shifts and your likes, you know, styles, everything. I mean, your dress code changes. I mean, I love what you said, your palate changes. I mean, yeah, your taste changes too. You know, you might acquire some new taste that you kind of like, what the hell is caviar? I mean, yeah, exactly. By the way, I just picked caviar.
By the way. Yeah, I love caviar. I know. I'm good.
Well, some people say like, ooh, that's you eat that stuff? Yeah, they're delicious.
Yeah, actually, I do. I really like it.
No, I so do I. But yeah, it's just a random thing I came up with, because sounds funny and weird, and it's kind of like, you know, on the extreme side. But the fact is, it changes things. You can change from ice cream to something else. I mean, it is different. But you're right. When you're young, I think we all have been there. You know, by the way, it is a fact even of life. I mean, and this is actually studies that more than 90% of people, we talked about this in different shows, they go into a career path. Oh, I want to be this. And they go and it's like, what the hell is this? This is not even like, so they go for a few. And by the way, I, you know, my kids have just been through college now, you know, in early couple of years now. And the one thing that is very common as I am working with them on this process is that no one, I go to these counselors and we're talking about career paths and stuff. the first 2 years, like literally just they're throwing stuff at them. Let's see if you can figure out all the generic stuff. And maybe, and by the time, like a year later, I was like, I don't want this major. I don't want that major. And they keep changing stuff. My oldest son, he went to biology. He went to business. I mean, he just kept changing his mind. And that's really just an example of how we are. But in terms of even career, I mean, you love acting and you did it, but sometimes you do it and it's like, okay, been there, done that. It's over. You know, like what's the next best thing?
What I really understood with reflection years later is that what acting gave me, what I was really craving was a place to be myself, right? Even though acting is, you're acting as a character, but I was never allowed, the way I was raised, the way I was trained, there was no feelings. I didn't feel anything, right? I didn't have feelings. I didn't have desires and wants. I didn't know how to process emotions, right? And so acting, when you really learn how to act, you actually learn how to process emotions and you actually learn to trust yourself. Because if really good actors go by instinct, they do their research, but then they go by instinct and they have to trust themselves completely. And so acting teaches you how to trust yourself. I believe that every single junior high and elementary school, if I could, should have improv classes, because improv teaches you how to trust yourself. So I'm a big believer in improv. And so, you know, I did improv, I did stand up, I took acting classes. And when I really started to know how to work myself, like I knew who I was and how I was working, I got what I needed out of acting, right? I always say God tricks you. God goes, hey, become an actress so you can actually get the tools you need. And then I'm going to rip it out of your heart because you're done with it, right? It's like, what? But it was devastating to realize I didn't want it anymore. But again, with that reflection, it was like, oh, but I got everything I needed out of it.
Well, that's a big point, because again, I mean, we get into things and it's part of who we become, right? I mean, it's really your learning curve and whatever that is. I mean, it's funny. I mean, I started in hospitality. I mean, that's like my first.
Who didn't? Hey, I was a waitress since I was 12, you know?
There you go. So literally I studied it. I mean, I was, that was my thing. My first job, my first gig was at Walt Disney World. So I was like, I was in La La Land here. I mean, literally Magic Land, right? But then I came up to New York and I went up in insurance. I did retail sales and stuff. I enjoy sales. I'm, you know, we talked about talking. I love talking. So I was like, okay, this I can do. And, you know, my friend, hey, this insurance thing is looking. And it's funny, I actually interviewed for the same day. This is true. I went to airlines and insurance space. I did interviews in the same day. And guess what? I was called in the insurance space, and 30 plus years later, you know, that's where I've been. And you know, in a lot of different places there, in different phases, you learn different things. And it's, you learn from one, you move to the other side, you change, you know, a little path. Maybe you go to one type of insurance to the other, and you keep learning. It shows you certain things. But you're right, it might be not as fulfilling. Now, one thing I've always done, I've done multiple things at the same time. So personally, I was able to get other experiences, if you want to call it that way. But I love what you said. You did it because that's what you thought you wanted, and kind of it was going to fill all that blank that you needed at the point. But once you got to where you needed it, and it's like, okay, I got this, but now it helped me, you know, shift and change, and I know exactly where I want to be next. And you did exactly that. And it's funny because I love what you said. There was no reality TV. Now there is. And you get to do what you want for you now, not for another character that's been given to you with a script. And that's an interesting thing, because when
But that was really hard. So let me step you back.
Go for it. Yeah.
When I gave up acting, I didn't know who I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. And that's true for most people. They're afraid to leave one thing because they don't know what the next thing is, right? So they stay there until they figure it out. Many times you can't figure it out without that abyss, so to speak. So I left acting and I went into a dark night, because who am I if I'm not an actress? And at the same time, I was trying to get pregnant and I couldn't get pregnant. So these two dreams that I had, having children and becoming an actress, were now no longer available to me. And I didn't know who I was. So for, I'd say, 2 to 3 years, I was like rolling around. I was waitressing, I was doing part-time PR work. I was, you know, I was just doing whatever. Right. And I had no passion, purpose, meaning. I was just treading water until that next thing came to fruition. And I think that emptiness, that land of emptiness, like I call it the desert, most people are petrified of going into the desert. Right. So they have to go from one thing they know to the next thing they know. Well, in order to get to the next thing that you are meant to be called for, you may not know that. And so you might have to go in the desert. And you might doing things like I was a banquet waitressing, and I was, you know, cocktail waitressing, and I was, like I said, part-time PR, and I was doing all these part-time gigs, and you know, none of it was, I mean, everything was fine, but that's not what I wanted to do with my life. That's not who I imagined myself to be or what I wanted. And it was in that desert of just kind of moving through all that that then brought me to the next place of ending up moving me to what I do today. But there was a huge desert period, and I would say it was like probably 3 years. And that's what most people are afraid of. They're afraid of leaving a sure thing for I don't know what thing.
You know, it's amazing you give the analogy of desert, but desert has its own appeal, right? I mean, it's not, you know, when you think about it, right? There are people that actually thrive in there. They enjoy it. Now there's a whole tourism in the desert world, right? And you can do a lot of things, but you don't know what you're going to discover. And you're right. There is that drought. And by the way, it takes a lot to leap forward into the unknown. And many people, that's one of them. Today's topic, we're going to talk more about fear in a minute. And that is really the biggest thing. People are always afraid of taking risks, and in business we say that all the time, no risk, no reward, right? You know, if you don't take the, you know, just a leap of faith, you jump in, and most people are waiting for the perfect timing, the perfect ingredients, the perfect formula, and there is no such thing. I mean, at least in my world, I have not seen that, and all the experts that I hear and listen to, and I listen to quite a bit, you know, are almost saying the same thing. There is no, it's a perfect thing. You gotta see what it is. You do things and you test things. And if it is meant for you, whatever is determined for your next part of life is going to come in front of you, across you. And you just have to, it's opportunities, doors open.
I think though, for so many people, just like you said, you know, I think for all the people who have done it, I think most people didn't do it the first time, right? They also held back. But it's one of the reasons why I actually got into fear is because when you understand why you're not leaping, like what is it that's causing that hesitation? Yes, you can call it perfectionism. Sure, you can call it, you know, don't want to live in the unknown, all those things. Sure, of course, all those things. And what it really is fear. And so once you start understanding and building relationship to what fear is, understanding what fear is, and then building your own relationship with it, then when you're in that spot of like, I don't know what to do, it no longer becomes a character defect. It no longer becomes like, what's your problem? You should know. Instead, you go, oh, I'm having all these thoughts and feelings, all these judgments about myself, all these expectations about myself and the world, and I should know this, and I should be this way, and I should, you know, I'm this year old, and I should have a house, and all these things. Those are all fear-based. And once you understand how you work and how fear works, then you logically get that what's happening is not personal. What's happening is not a failure on your part. It's not because you're weak, stupid, lazy, dumb, you know, failure, etc. It's literally because you're having a relationship with fear. And when you can do that, then everything does become available to you. Because the thing that stops us from doing anything is that mindset, right? Is that feeling, and you know, that the feelings we have, their body sensations, right? We get anxiety, we get worried, right? We get a backache. We have thoughts that move through our head. Who am I? I can't do that. It's our feeling set. You know, it's all our feelings. I feel bad. I don't feel good enough. I feel like an imposter. I don't feel worthy. All of these things, those are just conversations. Those are just labels, a different label for the word fear. That's all it is. And once you can say, I feel like an imposter, and you go, oh, that means I have what I call a trigger, a core trigger, i.e. the wheel of fear. My wheel of fear is activated. Oh, I'm procrastinating. Oh, my wheel of fear is activated. Now it becomes, like I said, not a character defect. It doesn't become, there's something wrong with you. It doesn't become like, why can't you get it together? There is no self-deprecation. Instead, it's like, oh, of course I have fear. I've never been here before. And now I've created not only the wheel of fear, but the wheel of freedom. So then I have the wheel of freedom, which you can get on and start moving forward on your wheel of freedom. Because anything you do on your wheel of freedom is going to be more aligned to you. So I think that's the thing, you know, when people say, oh, you just have to get a better coach, or you just have to do this, or you just have to do that, like some magical formula. And it's like, great, all that is good and nothing's wrong with any of that. But unless you know how you work and how it operates inside you and how it's personal and unique to you, then you're always going to be in that conversation, always going to be wondering, and always, many times, too often, blaming yourself, shaming yourself, beating yourself up, judging yourself, comparing yourself with something that isn't even any of your business and has nothing to do with you.
I'm listening to you, and I think everybody that's watching right now, listening, you know, this is like almost an alarm, you know, red flags, you know, all the whistles are going to be going right now, because I think we all can relate to that point. And it doesn't matter what level, stage in life. And sometimes here's this funny thing. Like, you know, I was talking to somebody, my friend actually, and it doesn't matter when and how long you've been out there and what experience you have. You know, there's always a new phase, a new something that you're going to, you know, that's going to be new to you. And therefore, the same sentiments you've always had will come back again to haunt you. And I love what you said. Unless you know what it is and how to fix it and how to deal with it, it's the same thing that's repeating. And like, how is it that I have all this expertise and experience, and I'm still getting the same kind of concept? You know, now, like, I'm supposed to be like ahead of this game, but it's not. I mean, because there's new experience.
That's not how it works. Yeah,
exactly. What I realized, this is just my own. I mean, I a week ago, I'm sitting like, I just realized one thing. Every day in life is unique, and it's a unique experience. No matter what it is, your environment and even your family, everything is shifting, and you will never get that moment before or how it was exactly. It's not the exact thing. Sometimes it's routine, it looks the same, but it's not. Every day you have different experiences, different things, and there is nothing you can do about it. And just the wheel of life, you mentioned the wheel, and we're gonna talk about the wheel, you know, system in a minute. It's that kind of concept. And you know, it's amazing how we function as humans. And by the way, something you said earlier about going to school and maybe like do improv, you know, to help people kind of figure out things, you know, on the spot right there, because that's what it is. And like, hey, here's
the
thing.
Trust yourself.
I mean, actually, I did some of that in college when I, you know, for hospitality, because I was a tour guide. So you had to just, hey, I need to stand and do this and, you know, come up with things. Okay. Or do some scene. They tell you just a little bit of a scenario picture and you got to do it, like climbing the wall on the ground or whatever. I mean, it was funny exercises that we did, but it helped a lot in what I saw later on. Sometimes you don't even realize what you're doing until
it hits.
Like, oh, I know what that was. Like, it's like, you know, just a piece of puzzle that's finally finding its spot, you know, later on. It's intriguing. But what I was talking about, the idea of school, I have not seen a lot of the stuff that, you know, we talk about today, you know, in these shows, you know, a lot of it is missing in our upbringing and the school system. I don't know why. You know, these are practical things that I think if we have them early on, we can probably defeat quite a bit of stuff, you know, and be ahead of the game, but it's not there. Maybe as the educators out there, you know, start thinking about how do we improve our next generation, well, there may be a way to introduce some things that are real life, you know, scenarios that they can be prepared for.
Well, I love what you're saying, but I'll also say this. The one reason is because I'm the only one talking about fear the way we're talking about it. And also, teachers, educators, our system, they don't want those kids smarter than they are, because then they're uncontrollable. Right. So that's one of the things you have to have the courage. You have to have the fearlessness. You have to understand what's happening so that you can live in that unknown place. So most of our school, most of our jobs, most of our education system, again, I could go on and on. It's about making the unknown known. Right. I got to make it all known so that I can systemize it. And again, systems are awesome. I have systems. I love systems. Right. But everything's known, because then it's predictable and then I can get guaranteed results. But if it's unknown, then there's danger. And for many of us, we're not comfortable in the unknown. I was just doing some quotes earlier today, and one of my very favorite quotes of mine is freedom equals your capacity to live in the unknown. Freedom equals your capacity to live in the unknown. Freedom equals your capacity to live in the unknown. So people sit here and think, oh, I'm free. I can do all these things. I'm free. Well, it's like, if you are not okay with living in the unknown, having no idea what's going to go down after you make this decision or before you make this decision, if you're not okay with that, then you're not free. Your freedom is contingent on the known, and that's not real freedom. So our ability to live in the unknown allows us to fearlessly hand the things to a younger generation, you know, different groups, etc., and we're okay with that. But for most people, there is a fear of danger because it feels out of control, right? Because I'm not masterful at it, then how am I going to keep rein them in? How am I going to keep them going? And too many of us, I would say all of us, most of our lives, hopefully not all of our lives, but too many areas of our lives, we are literally making decisions based in fear without our even knowing it.
Well, you really, I mean, you hit it right there on the head there. You know, it's amazing. Like, I love what you said. The idea is there's a lot of fear-based, you know, humanity. I mean, I think as humans, we work that way. And I think it's part of our creation, our you know, makeup, a fabric, right?
Part of our neurobiology.
It's part of us, right? And actually, it serves a purpose because, you know, this question of how people, like in psychology, you know, without fear, we will be completely clueless about, you know, risks. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people get hurt, right? But there is calculated, you know, stuff. There's different levels of what we can potentially talk about fear. I have the expert here. So you'll get us through that process of the different levels. But at the end of the day, I think everybody... I can tell you this, Rhonda, listening to you right now, my eyes got a little bigger just because I am in the process of making a big change, you know, in a lot of, you know, in personal life and business life. And it is the unknown. I mean, I'm literally talking about the unknown. I mean, you can only plan so much, but there's a lot of unknown and a lot of question marks in whatever you do, especially when you're doing something big and a project and move, whatever it is. And I listen to you. You just gave me a little bit of a, yeah. I can do this. You know, I literally just listen to you because I know that what I'm doing is supposed to be the right thing, at least at this moment. I see it. But I know there's a lot of unknown and question marks in this process that I'm going through right now. But whatever it is, you know, you kind of reinforce the ideology that I have and the just the energy to keep going forward and never look back. And by the way, if you think about history, and I think there's a lot of examples, the people that made it, whether it's countries, governments, individuals, you know, businesses, there's always that thing. Like, you know, they go forward in a world that's probably the unknown. And all the technology today, all the stuff that we have, innovations, are things that people kind of laughed at, or they were like, you can't possibly do that. We can't fly. I mean, guess what? We fly. You can't go to space. Well, we do. You can't do this. You know, oh my God, electricity. What is that? I mean, people had, you know, people got crucified and hanged, right, you know, for ideology that was crazy, right? At a certain point of life. So it's amazing.
But let's get even more macro.
Go for it.
It's not only those things, right? But it's also losing weight. Mm-hmm. It's also, right? It's also buying a new car. It's also moving different neighborhoods. It's also getting divorced, right? So we can be aspirational, like you're saying, which I love, which is like, yeah, you know, nobody has ever, like Steve Jobs didn't become who Steve Jobs has been without taking a whole bunch of risks, right? And without a whole bunch of unknown. And it's the same exact mechanism. If somebody is going, I now want to lose weight, but they have a perception of themselves, an image of themselves seen a certain way. And if they lose weight, that all changes. I can't tell you how many women I've met and men, but specifically women in this instance, is they've lost weight and it becomes frightening to become more attractive. They don't know how to handle male attention. They don't know how to handle being, you know, flirted with. They don't know how to handle all that attention. So they gain the weight back because it's too scary, it's too daring, and they don't have the willingness or the knowledge or the understanding that it's just a skill set they have to learn, right? And that's how most of us walk around. We're making micro decisions all day long, micro and macro decisions all day long, and we have no idea how many are driven by fear.
What are that? You teach fear, that fear often disguises itself on everyday lives, right? Yeah. But what are some of the hidden ways that fear shows up without realizing it?
Let me give you a quiz.
Oh boy.
I'm going to give you a quiz. So
go for it.
For those people who are listening or watching us right now, if you're in a safe place, go ahead and shut your eyes. If you're driving, please don't touch your eyes, but shut your eyes if you're safe to do so. And I'm going to read a list of words. And if you do any of these things or feel any of these things, I want you to nod your head. Now, I want you to nod your head because that nodding of the head is actually telling yourself like, yeah, I do that. Yeah, I do that. So don't fake yourself out, because that's, I think, one of the ways that we keep ourselves trapped. We don't actually tell ourselves the truth. Okay. So tell yourself the truth about nodding your head. So I'm going to read a list of words. And if you do any of these things or feel any of these things, nod your head. Okay, here we go. Do you ever deny yourself? Do you ever isolate? Do you ever pretend everything's okay when it's not? Do you ever hide out? Do you ever whine? Do you ever settle? Do you ever compare yourself? Do you ever secretly manipulate? Do you get defensive? Do you get judgmental? Do you complain? Do you procrastinate? Do you people please? Do you blame? Do you ever feel like you're struggling? Do you worry? Do you try to control things? Do you deflect? Do you ever feel bitter? You ever feel powerless? What about dissatisfied? Ever feel resentful? Entitled? Ever feel guilty? Disappointed? Are you ever perfectionist? Do you ever feel overwhelmed? Irresponsible? Irritated, like you might now with me having you nod your head 100 million times? Do you ever feel ignored? What about annoyed? What about get caught in self-pity? Do you ever feel So what percentage did you nod your head? Right? And
60-70%.
Right. So when I talk to an audience of 100 people, 1,000 people, over 90% nod their head at over 90%. And I would say most people nod their head at really 100%. So these are the things, these are the signs, these are fears. We don't procrastinate unless there's a fear. We don't get overwhelmed unless there's a fear. We don't feel bitter unless there's a fear. We don't feel entitled without a fear, right? We don't become a perfectionist without a fear, right? So all of these things that I read, and there's more, I didn't read them all. All of these things, what most people do is they do character assassinations, right? They blame themselves. They think they're faults. Oh, I know I shouldn't be a perfectionist. Oh, I've got to quit procrastinating. Oh, I've got to calm myself down. I can't get overwhelmed. Oh my God, I wish I could quit doing this. Oh, I judge myself. I'm so judgmental. Oh, I just got to quit being so judgmental. I got to put boundaries up. Oh my gosh, right? And so we do all these things on a daily basis in all different areas of our lives. And we don't equate them to, these are just fear responses. I call them fear responses. Instead, we say they're character flaws, they're problems, they're the things that are wrong with me, these are the things I have to fix. And if we just did one thing and one thing only in this moment and started relabeling, reframing all the things we blame ourselves for, judge ourselves for, wish we should be different, I should change this, why am I still doing this? If we could just label each one, I'm doing a fear response, this is a fear response. Okay, when you label it that way, which is how I label it, when it's a fear response, then what does that mean? That means that the reason you're doing it, the reason you're feeling it, the reason you're experiencing it is because what I call the core trigger, your core fear has been activated. Now, you may not know that. You may not know why it's activated. You might not even have any semblance of what it was. Doesn't matter. But how you know what's happening is that you're doing a fear response. And then you go, wait a minute. I'm procrastinating right now. Wait a minute. Okay, wait a minute. That means I was triggered. I had a core trigger. My number one fear has been triggered. And my response to that unconsciously is to now show up as procrastinating. When we can relabel those, reframe those, now it takes the bad, I'm not good enough, there's something wrong with me off it. All that shame gets eliminated. All that shame melts away, which then creates an opening for us to walk through as claiming our fullness, claiming and accepting ourselves as is, and then move on to what I call the wheel of freedom. So the first thing we have to do is start owning the way that we operate in the world, i.e. these are fear responses. And you don't do them because you're wrong or you're lazy or you don't have discipline and all that other stuff we put on ourselves. I don't have worth, I don't have value, it's all baloney. Instead, it's just a fear response. Then once you identify that, like I said, then you get on over to your wheel of freedom, because now you know what to do. Now you know where you're going. You know how to reactivate and reignite and reintegrate to your true self.
Well, thank you. Right. I mean, I think this is part of your roadmap in the book. Is that, am I getting that? Because this is like really, I mean, by the way, it's amazing the exercise you did, because I didn't expect it to be that. And so as you started putting those words, I mean, I did not about 60-70% of the time. I mean, I do control to a degree certain things, but you can't beat some of these. I mean, even if, you know, I was leery about the response, but I know at a certain point I've done it. So it's like, it's not always, yeah, sometimes you are stronger than other times and
But it's not strength. That's the thing.
Well, I mean, that's an expression, you know.
Right. But even that expression, and I know you can use it because it powers you. If that word empowers you, great. But for many people, that word strength actually is tied to them feeling weak. And so then they have to pretend to try to be strong, when really what has to happen is they have to fall into their true nature. They have to fall into themselves and really allow themselves to be vulnerable, allow themselves to tell the truth. But most people label their life through the lens of, I'm disciplined, I'm strong, I'm this. And again, all those words in and of themselves are not bad or good. But are they keeping you trapped in the box? Right. And for most people, that using that word strong, and again, maybe one of your fearless words, like you might use that word and be like, yeah, fearless. But for many people, it actually traps them in fear.
Amazing. You know, like, psychology is weird, like how we operate. And by the way, you make perfect sense. We have these, I guess, systems that we try to, or facades that, you know, and maybe like definitions and words that we use to justify, you know, whatever our outcomes and feelings. To your point, it's probably just to veer away from the truth that, you know, I'm just simply afraid of whatever makes
exactly
is.
Exactly right.
You know, and I by the way, I think there's no one that can deny that. I mean, I think that's our true nature.
But we do every day. Right? Like you said, no one can deny it. Yeah. Psychologically, we're having a conversation about it. Yeah. You and I aren't going to deny that. And people listening are like, yeah, that's right. But now put them in reality. Now put them on a date. Now put them at their job. Now put them in a family gathering. And all of a sudden, this, like, I can't deny it, all of a sudden goes out the window. Right? And it's like, denial. Right? So because we have to character assassinate. Why do we character assassinate? Because if it's my fault, that means I can fix it. So we beat ourselves up in order to actually take more responsibility than is ours, because then we think, well, I at least have the power to change it. But what the trick is, it's not about that you have the power to change it. It actually, it's just a shift in mind. It's not have to change anything. So it's just a fascinating shift in actually the framing of how you live and how you see your world.
I mean, you know, it's really mindset, you know, 100, you know, at his core. I mean, it's really shifting the way we see things. I mean, yeah. And I think that's the hard part. I mean, like, people, I think, like you said, a denial. We're constantly, like, you know, try to deny that we have these, because again, these are signs of weaknesses in the way we've been brought up. Everything that is not satisfying to the others, you know, becomes a weakness on your behalf and your part.
There's no such thing as a weakness, right?
But again, that's how. Right?
Yeah. but we're trained to think that. Yeah. We're trained to think strong or weak, right? We're trained. Yeah. We're trained to think success or failure. So I'm going to give you an example. I was speaking and teaching at this mastermind for people who make eight figures. Okay, and so I was talking, and this, you know, guy raised his hand, and, you know, I mean, I think it's very brave when you're sitting around people that make eight figures, you know, and, you know, you're asking people to ask you questions. Most people aren't going to raise their hand and admit they need help, right? So this guy was brave. He was raising his hand, and he said, okay, well, what I want to change is that I make millions of dollars, I lose it all. I make millions of dollars, I lose it all. I make millions of dollars, and I lose it all, and I want to quit doing that. Okay. And I'm like, okay, no big deal. That's great. And I started asking him questions. And what was revealed very quickly, literally in the next sentence, was that's what his father did, and that was his grandfather did. His grandfather won millions, won very, very wealthy, lost everything. Lost everything. Father did the same thing. I said, oh, I see. So in order for you to stay connected to your family, you have to keep doing the exact same thing they're doing. And he's looking at me like, what? I said, well, have you forgiven your father and grandfather for handing down this way of being? I mean, he literally looked at me like I had 10 heads, like, what? I go, well, in order for you to be your grandfather's grandchild and your father's son, in order to keep that connection, even though you don't want that, in order for you to feel one with them, your whole being says, I must be like them, even though you don't want to be, and you are making millions of dollars and losing it. I said, so how do you break that connection? You move to being fearless. And one of the proactive behaviors you could do is actually forgiving your grandfather and forgiving your father. Now, I guarantee you 100% that that man did not think that I was going to be telling him to forgive anybody when he was having a problem with winning or losing. He thought I was going to give him some strategy to keep his money. you know, he thought I was going to give him some technique and some tool to help him understand how to make better decisions, right? But really the work was to shift an energy. And the only way to shift that energy in that situation is to forgive. And I remember him looking at me, and I remember the room, because they're like, what? Because again, they just want, how do I keep my money and how do I make more of it? It's like, yeah, that's not how this works, gang. There's something much deeper going on. So that's the thing. When you are in a fearful place, again, unbeknownst to all of us, we're running on fear most times. We're just looking for a solution to make our life better in this moment. We're not looking for forgiveness unnecessarily until we get to the place where we must forgive, right? But that's the solution for so many of us, in order for us to take the shame away and the guilt away from the decisions we've made in the past. And the blame that we've placed on others is the act of forgiveness. So forgiveness is a fearless act. And for most of us, we don't do it near enough, and we don't understand how it's a fearless act. We think it's a sign of weakness. So again, going back to that strength and weakness, it's such a tricky, again, if it's your word that works for you, awesome. But for most people, it actually totally triggers them.
You got to think about this. I got to like dissect this whole thing and figure out like what are my triggers and how I can switch pull up the switch literally and kind of, you know, shift this mindset to this. But you
can just read Fearless Living, or, you know, go to fearlessliving.org and I'll show you how to do that.
There you go. I love it. I love it. Well, that's what we hear, right? We want to bring that to the folks. But so, you know, you mentioned something about the wheel and then freedom from fear, or the wheel of freedom. Yep. You know, so your work is really getting with people, coaching them on how to understanding their logics and their, I guess, practices, and then revealing for them really what would be the way to counterattack or counter, you know, whatever that's holding them and making them leave in that fear bubble. And then once, I mean, to be honest with you, it would be a great feeling when you don't have to fear anything. I mean, literally just, hey, I have no fear on anything. I'm good. But
you're always going to have fear visit you, because you're going to keep growing. So, right. So freedom is our capacity to live in the unknown. Right. So anytime, like you said, you're stepping into a new business idea, right? You're stepping into a new way to do business, or a new way to share what you love. Well, that's the unknown. Right. So, of course, you're going to have some fears come up. May not be fears on scale of 1 to 10 to 10, might be threes, but there's some fear. So that's the thing. You want to build a relationship with what I call the wheel of fear and wheel of freedom, so that you can identify quicker, so you can move from the wheel of fear to the wheel of freedom with ease. And so then you're not stopped by fear, but instead you recognize it and you know what's happening to you. You don't feel crazy. You don't feel stupid. You don't feel weak. You don't feel like a failure. You don't feel rejected. You don't feel abandoned. Instead, you know exactly what's happening from a psychological point of view, but also from a physiological point of view, from a neuroscience point of view, so that you can actually make a different choice.
Rhonda, thank you. And you know, it's amazing, because what you're talking about here, it's like sometimes even if you, and you know, you have control, right? Or a perception of control.
Yeah.
The thing is that you're still surrounded by people around you. And so that's even right. When you make a decision, sometimes you're always taking the input from everyone around you. And that causes more, I guess, more load on you, more pressure. How do we diffuse that? I mean, because technically to listening to you, to be truly in that sphere of freedom and completely fearless of the unknown, you mm-hmm. need to be like, you know, almost rejecting any input that is going to almost like being an anchor that's dragging you down at sea, right? And it's going to, like, you know, make you sink. You know, you want to get free of all that, but there's all these things. I mean, whether you hear, I mean, from the news to the information you have, to the upbringing, to the family values, religion, all the stuff that the family, you know, members, your friends, all your entourage is somewhat, and by the way, it's true. You tell someone about an idea, oh my God, you're crazy. It's like, what are you doing? That's not going to work. I mean,
they're called fear junkies. They're called fear junkies, Hurricane. They're called fear junkies.
I love it.
So one of the things, and by the way, this is one of the biggest reasons people don't take risks. 100% are the people around them. What my boss going to think? What's my wife going to think? What's my husband going to think? What are my kids going to think? What are my grandparents going to think? What are my dad's going to think? What are my neighbors going to think? What are my best friends going to think? This is actually one of the number one reasons. I can't tell you. People come to me and say, you know, because we're working on the wheels and stuff. Oh, but if I do this, then my family's going to hate me. I go, no, sweetheart. It's not about either or. You're going into black and white thinking. No, what you're going to know how to do is work with fear junkies, right? You don't have to make them the enemy and you don't have to cut them out. All this conversation nowadays of toxic people, I'm not saying there's not toxic people, but a lot of the toxicity, what people call toxic people, is because they don't have the skills on how to manage it. They don't know how to deal with it. So they just call them toxic and get rid of them. Instead, it's like, well, you know, like I have relatives. I have an uncle. He passed away recently. But my uncle, when my parents died, my uncle was not there for me. And people would be like, why do you even talk to your uncle? He was not there for you. You know, he abandoned you. I'm like, but I love my uncle. Yeah, but he wasn't there for you. He did nothing for you. I go, yeah, you're right. He did nothing for me. He didn't help us. He abandoned us completely. You're absolutely right. But I'm bigger than that abandonment. I'm bigger than that, right? So, but people could not get their head around why I had a relationship with my relatives after my parents died. Like, and you know, as I aged. So there's a whole thing on fear junkies, how to work with fear junkies, because you have to know, but also how to create a fear buster team, because most people don't really have support. I mean, you and I both know loneliness is an epidemic right now. So we don't know how to build a fear buster team. And a fear buster team aren't yes people, right? They're literally there to support you and being taking more fearless choice, making fearless choices, but you're also there for them to make more fearless choices. So it's about understanding what a fear junkie is, how to work with a fear junkie, and how to start identifying and building a fear buster team so that you have that support that you need to make more fearless choices. Because when you are by yourself out in the middle of nowhere, I mean, that's why coaches and therapists and people like you and I exist, is that you don't want to do it alone because it's scary alone. It's scarier alone. So when you have that fear buster team and you have that coach or therapist, et cetera, and you understand how to work with fear junkies, now you're not held back by them, right? They're not part of the equation. Now you can stay clean and really start honoring what's moving through you on what your next decision is, what you want to do next. So you no longer weighted down, like you said, right? You said you weighted down, like you're no longer weighted down by that.
Well, around that, so we live in an era of social media now, right? I mean,
yes.
So we used to deal with just that, the family, the junkies, or the fear junkies, as you said, that are your entourage. But now there's the whole world is out there, and you start scrolling down in any social media, and if you pick one of those and you watch it for 10 seconds, the algorithm is going to pop up like 100 of them back to back. And now your mind is like bombarded with all this, I guess, negative environment or energy. And now you're talking about fear. Now your fear is just going from 0 to 1 to 100. I mean, in less than a 2 minute, like, you know, now you're, oh, do I do this? Am I going to do this? Oh my God, it's not going to work. Because, and a lot of people are just really emphasizing, oh, if you do this, oh my God, everybody's experience is different. That's one, right? And everybody's ingredients are different. Everybody's, you know, life is different. I mean, your conditions, my conditions can be different in a lot of ways. And maybe, you know, I can do things in a way that's different from your style, right? And we might have the same results, but we just have different ways of going about this.
That's
but
right.
Now, all talking about junkies, I love what you said. You're going to have, you know, a whole team to kind of counter these folks, these junkies, but you have to develop that.
That's
but
right.
how do you do that with social media? I mean, I for one, I mean, I'll tell people just don't watch stuff that is right. relevant to you. But unfortunately, you know, people sometimes as soon as they see something, oh my God. I mean, look, we had, you know, the war, right? You know, between Ukraine and Russia. Now we're thinking about Israel and you know, Iran awesome. Recently.
Yeah.
We're talking about doomsday already. I mean, you know, so you talk about fear. That's like the highest level. Like, how do I do this? How, you know, life goes on. I mean, we had the pandemic. Obviously, it was real tragic,
yeah.
and people,
yeah.
and so people are just, you know, it's we constantly bombarded. I mean, you know,
yes.
what level of coaching that I mean the world needs to actually get away from it. You know, I mean, you do this work, you know, but
oh, I know. I wish I could coach every you know every world leader. I wish I could do that. That would be so awesome. I call that forth. I coach world leaders. You know,
you can. I mean, you're doing the work. I mean, I hope that you know these folks do take advantage of your book, your work,
yeah.
and you know, I mean, even through the podcast, you're going around. You know, this is something that people should stumble on eventually. And
yes,
and oh my God, you know, well, listen, that's what we do. We got to promote it,
right,
and hopefully
right,
we get
right.
to people.
Yeah? That's right. But you know, you're talking about all the different layers, right? Existential fear, right? I.e. dying, i.e. you know, the nuclear bomb, right? So we're talking about existential fear, we're talking about identity fears, we're talking about interpersonal relationship fears, right? And what it really comes down to, and I know you and I both know this, and I know that people will resonate with this, is that it's always at the level of choice. It's always at the level of choice and personal responsibility. So I have three daily practices that I teach my students. First thing is have compassion. So one, do you have compassion for yourself and do you have compassion for the world? Do you actually cultivate that in yourself? The second thing is, are you honest with yourself? Are you honest with yourself? Most people aren't honest with themselves. Most people definitely don't have compassion for themselves. So compassion is a skill, a value, a quality to cultivate. And then once you give yourself compassion, then you are honest with yourself. What is your shit? What isn't your shit? Like, what is the things you've got to clean up? What are the things that you're being powerless about? What are the things you're giving into, right? Be honest with yourself. And then the third thing is personal responsibility. Be responsible for your choices in your life. Again, each one of those things is scarier than bejeebers, and it's not as easy as I'm making it out to be. But just like when we think about the war in Ukraine, or when we think about, you know, the USAID who just, they just got rid of, like, I don't remember how many it was. I'm going to make up a number, but it was like 27,000 children could have been fed and they burnt the food instead, right? Is there outrage? You should have outrage. That should make you outraged, right? And then you have to say, well, how am I contributing to that? And what can I do in my moment in this world to start shifting the energetic of the energy of the world? Well, again, if you want more compassion, if you don't want wars, you got to start cultivating compassion in your own life, right? You got to start cultivating that place so that if that energetic field gets bigger and bigger, then wars will not be acceptable. Right. So most of us get caught looking outside of ourselves and don't really feel the personal power, which we all have, but we don't feel it. We don't believe it. The personal power that we can impact the planet just by the way we think and feel. So and by the way we act. So where we always have to go down to, because again, I can get an existential crisis as well. I can start thinking about those wars and be like, well, is that what's the point? What's the point of change, right? We can all get there. And that's normal because we care and we have big hearts. And then we have to go, okay, wait a minute, Rhonda, wait a minute, Hurricane, wait a minute. Yes, do I want the war? No, I don't. Do I want the children to starve? No, I don't. Okay, so is it mine to do to go and work for USAID to make? No, it's not. That's not mine to do. Mine is to do fear. Okay, great. So what are you going to do? Okay, well, I got to keep spreading the message. Okay, what can you do? Well, I've got to become as compassionate as I can be. I've got to forgive. I've got to shift the energetic field. So we're always working on multiple planes. We're working on the actual physical plane, i.e. making decisions, taking a walk, you know, making phone calls, but we're also working on the energetic field. And you can be working on both of those things at the same time. And when you do that, you feel more powerful. You don't feel like you're at the effect or at the whim of the external world. So when you look at social media, you are saying to yourself, if you are susceptible to that, which too many of us are, myself included at times, when I know that I'm susceptible to social media, I know that I am feeling disconnected from myself, right? I am on my wheel of fear. If I look at social media and I'm not affected, I know I'm connected to myself and I know I'm on my wheel of freedom. So again, you have so much more power than we think we do by just how we decide how to interact with ourselves on a daily basis and what we decide to invite into our lives and what we decide how to make our decisions, how do we make our choice points, and how do we help ourselves really recognize where fear and freedom live and choose freedom at every moment possible.
I love it, Rhonda. I want more of this. You know, I know we're coming to the hour here and you have a hard stop. You know, so a couple of things. First of all, thank you so much for I think just listening to this, you know, hour right here, we can take a lot to the bank. And I think we have the raw material, the ingredients to at least start working on ourselves and moving from that wheel of fear to the wheel of freedom. So that's great. And I love the concept, just the system, the sound of it. It's just cool, you know? So that's great. Now I want to just to bring the audiences, how can people work with you and really, you know, get you as coach or a speaker or any type of form to work?
Website is fearlessliving.org, fearlessliving.org. And all my social media is at Rhonda Britton, RhondaBritten. And also I want to give your listeners a gift, fearlessliving.org/risk, RISK, fearlessliving.org/risk, RISK. And it's my students, like, their favorite tool. It's called Stretch, Risk, or Die, and it cures procrastination. And it's three 15-minute videos, super easy. It's got templates, worksheets, everything you need. So if you've got a goal and a dream and you're not moving forward, or you're feeling like, oh my God, I'm feeling stuck in any way, go and grab that course. It's three 50-minute videos. Like I said, it's got worksheets, templates. And also in the third video, I actually break down the Wheel of Fear. So you can actually see the Wheel of Fear in motion. You can see my Wheel of Fear in motion. So you're going to get to know the fears better. And there's my alarm going off because I teach a class at the top of the hour. So now my class is waiting for me. But go to fearlessliving.org/risk. And I look forward to part two.
Thank you, Rhonda. Much appreciated. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, be fearless.
Have a great one.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, folks. That's it. That's the end for our show today. We had the great pleasure of having Rhonda Brin with us. And yes, let's go from the Wheel of Fear to the Wheel of Freedom. Let's connect on that. The description of the show will have her link, and hopefully we can get, you know, and get to take the advantage of the offer, and let's go to that, you know, link, and let's see what that fear of the Wheel of Fear, you know, is, so we can work around it. And I think if we can live in a world with less fear, everything else will be better. American Age, thank you for watching. We'll be talking soon. New day, new show on topic. Bye for now.